wishing all Radio Aryan listeners a happy Christmas and a diversity-free new year.
Tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 12th of December, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, I may have spoke a little too soon about the good news about the petition against the UN Global Compact. It's managed to go way over 100,000 people signing it, saying that they want it debated in Parliament before Theresa May does anything about it, and she's already signed it. And the only people that have spoken about it so far that have made a pronouncement on it are the department responsible for foreign aid, not the Home Secretary, not the people that are responsible for protecting our borders, but the people that are responsible for sending millions of pounds of our money abroad to the third world so that they can save up enough money so that they can pay people traffickers to make their way into Europe. The more that we help these countries to develop, the more people they send into Europe and into America. It doesn't help. It doesn't prevent that from happening at all. And they just keep on increasing and increasing. They don't actually contribute anything. There is nothing that Africa has ever, or Africans have ever contributed to civilization. They are a people that never even developed the wheel on their own. And yet we are encouraging them to breed. We're sending money over there. And the UN are trying to force everywhere else in the world to accept their excess population, the people that Africa can't actually feed for themselves. Africa can't feed itself. There are adverts on the television all the time. Feed the starving Africans. Find water for the starving Africans. And instead of saying, well, they should all get sterilized, or we should encourage them to get sterilized, pay them to get sterilized, we say, oh, well, all the other countries in the world will have to accept their excess population. That's the solution. That is not the solution. That's how to destroy civilization. And this first news report that I've got today concerns this. More than 750 million people want to migrate to another country permanently, according to Gallup research published on Monday, as 150 world leaders were signing up to the controversial UN Global Compact, which critics say makes migration a human right. So 750 million people have done so much damage to their own country that they don't want to live there anymore. And they want to invade another country and take the wealth from another country. 750 million people. And this UN compact will make it a human right for them to go wherever they like. The Gallup World Poll survey, which interviewed 453,122 adults, so half a million people in 152 countries between 2015 and 2017, found that 15% of the world's adult population would like to move to another country if they had the chance. 15%. Noting this proportion had risen from 13% between 2010 and 2012, and 14% between 2013 and 2016, the pollster commented that rising populism and a backlash to mass immigration seen in many Western electorates has apparently not deterred would-be migrants from wanting to seek gibsmedats in other countries. And I would also point out there that all this, oh yes, well, we're going to get tough on immigration and we're not going to allow them just to fly in or get boats in. We'll rescue them if they're at sea. None of that has prevented them from wanting to come here. None of the foreign aid that we've been sending over there has prevented them from wanting to come here. It's just increased. This is what I'm saying. The higher the standard of living that we actually raise in the third world, the higher it gets raised, the more they send to Europe and America. You know, the Bible says that we should have nothing to do with the other races. We shouldn't seek their peace. We shouldn't seek to go to war with them either, but we shouldn't seek their peace. We should just have nothing to do with them. And all it's done is cause us problems. Our altruism saying, well, we want to give these people medicine, we want to give them civilization, we want to build up their countries for them, we want to teach them to read and write. They don't thank us for it. They accuse us of being racist for it and demand to be given everything that our ancestors sacrificed for to provide for us. Regionally, the desire to migrate was found to be highest in sub-Saharan Africa, where 33% of the adults wanted to migrate permanently, followed by Latin America and the Caribbean at 27%. Just think about that, because this really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, that the highest desire to migrate was in sub-Saharan Africa, which has the lowest average IQ in Africa. I was going to say it has the lowest average IQ in the world, but I think the Australian Aborigines actually have a lower IQ than the sub-Saharan Africans. That's the reason why 33% of them want to migrate permanently, because they are not capable of creating the civilization that we have for themselves. And not only are they not capable of creating it, they're not capable of maintaining it either. If 33% of our populations in the West were made up of the sub-Saharan Africans, we would have no civilization. Our country would look like Africa does. It would all be shanty towns. Everything would be falling apart. And there would just be trash everywhere. Rubbish everywhere. And of course, in Latin America, you've got the mestizos. You've got an average IQ there of 85. In the Caribbean, again, Negroes and mulattoes, average IQ of 75. And then apparently there are European nations outside of the EU, 26% of them want to move, and the Middle East and North Africa is 24%. So it's massive numbers of people that want to leave their own countries for some reason. And obviously the establishment will try to just push this idea that it's because of racism that they've been kept down in their own countries, and it's because of colonialism, and that's why their countries aren't any good. And it's not. That's not the reason. The reason why the countries aren't any good is because the people that are in power are corrupt. And the reason why they are corrupt is because they don't have the same understanding of justice that we have. They don't have the same morals as us. They never developed the golden rule of do unto others as you would have done to yourself. And the reason for that is because they can't think of abstract ideas. The proof for the fact that they can't think of abstract ideas is that none exist in their language. If you look at their language, if you look at their vocabulary, they don't have words for things that you cannot see and touch. The idea of putting yourself into somebody else's shoes just isn't possible for them. Gallup found there were 13 countries in which half or more of the adult population said they wanted to migrate to another country. So literally half of Africa, or half of one of these African countries, wants to move to a white country, with Sierra Leone topping the list for its proportion of would-be migrants at 71%. Three quarters of the adult population in Sierra Leone wish to invade another country if they get the chance. followed by Liberia at 66% and Haiti at 63%. No coincidence that they're all black, of course. The United States remains by far the most popular country for people wanting to move abroad, with 21% of potential migrants selecting it as their top destination, with Canada, Germany, France, Australia, and the UK each also ranking highly. Earlier this year, Breitbart London reported on data from the Pew Research Center, which revealed that up to two-thirds of the 1.1 billion population, which is a number that is set to more than double by 2050, of sub-Saharan Africa were wanting to migrate to Europe or the United States, millions of whom were planning on making the journey within the next 5 years. Just think about those figures. 1.1 billion people, 1.1 billion Negroes in Africa. I think if you go back to the beginning of last century, it's probably only about 100 million in the whole of Africa, and they've ballooned to 1.1 billion by 2018. And in the next 20 years, 30 years, that's going to double. It's going to double to 2.2 billion low IQ Negroes in the world. And our politicians think the way to deal with that is to give them free access to Europe. They're going to eventually turn the whole world into Africa. The whole world is going to become the third world if they have their way, if nothing's done about it. And this is why I say that the problems that we are facing as a race from these other races are being created by our own people at the top. It's our own people that are traitors among our own people that are encouraging this and that are bringing these invaders into our countries. And it's those traitors that we need to remove. We need to remove them from power. And who knows how that's going to happen, but we need to be doing everything we possibly can within the law to make that happen. Doesn't matter how small it is. Everything we do can have an effect. Every action we make has a consequence. Analysts such as Numbers USA President Roy Beck have long pointed out that mass migration into Western countries can never resolve the challenges faced by poor countries, especially as the populations in the third world increase. And if you think about it, even if you just had the more intelligent ones, because there are always exceptions to the rule, there are always outliers, there are the odd high IQ Negroes. Even if you had high IQ Negroes only coming into Europe and America, that would mean there were no high IQ Negroes left in Africa. None whatsoever for their own people. So even if you have sympathy for them, this is the wrong way to go about doing things. And as is pointed out here, the more these countries are actually developed, the more the population increases and the more they send to Europe and America. It's like if you're feeding wild animals, they will increase and eat all the food. The more food you put out, the more they will produce. And it's not the same with white people. We need more than just food and warmth and shelter. We need to create things. We need to achieve things. We need to make something of ourselves. We have this desire to make life better and to work for the community. And that's how we find our value, is in our value to our community. Negroes don't have that same sense of wanting to achieve something. All they want is material benefits. If they've got their material benefits, they will just continue to reproduce. This is why they continue to reproduce in slavery, because they had all their needs paid for. They had a roof over their head. They had warmth. They had clothing. They were looked after medically. They had food. So why not reproduce? If you were to put a white man in that situation, the white man wouldn't want to reproduce because he wants more out of life. That's why we have a civilization and they don't. And if this continues, we will lose our civilization. Well, I've got another couple of stories for us today, and this concerns the sort of people that the traitors are bringing into our countries and the sort of crimes that they're carrying out. Horrific crimes, crimes that never would have happened when we had homogeneous countries that were just made up of white people. This first story comes from the Daily Mirror. A white groom-to-be was stabbed to death as he challenged a Negro who swore at his fiancée in the street and called her a slag, a court heard today. Civil engineer Michael Grimshaw, 34, was knifed in the neck after partner Michelle Pook was asked, "What are you looking at?" It was claimed. A court heard how blood came out of the victim's neck like a tap. And this really highlights the fact of how dangerous these Negroes are. You have to be really wary around them. Don't engage them at all. Avoid eye contact with them. Avoid talking to them. Avoid having anything to do with them, because there is always a small chance that something like this is going to happen. And the more there are of them, the higher the chances are that they will explode in violence, because there will just be more of the extremely violent ones among them. I mean, it's just logic. It's not all of them that are like this, but just the fact that some of them are like this is reason to not want them in your countries. In a heartbreaking statement read to the court, Miss Pook told of the moment she knew her partner wouldn't make it. She said he was on the floor with his eyes open, but there was nothing there. People were performing CPR on him, and nobody would let me near him. I knew he was going to die. And this poor woman, she watched her husband-to-be die, all in a matter of seconds. All in a matter of seconds. A Negro called her a slag. He said, "What are you looking at?" Pulled the knife out and stabbed her husband. As the victim staggered away with a fatal wound, Tyrone, Patrick, of course he would be called Tyrone, wouldn't he, 33, jumped up and down as if proud and said, "That's what happens. This is my estate. I run it," a jury was told. And Patrick denies murder. But again, this shows there's no remorse. There's no concern for the victim that he's just stabbed. He's proud of doing it. A white man would be shocked at what he's just done. A white man would drop the knife and run. He wouldn't jump up and down and proudly start boasting about it and strutting about it. As we'll hear later on in the story, he even started asking anybody else if they wanted to have a fight with him. Mr. Grimshaw from Sale, Greater Manchester, who worked for construction firm Balfour Beatty, suffered fatal injuries, including a 12-centimetre downwards wound which penetrated his lung. He died an hour later in hospital. And that's premeditated. I mean, this Negro just wanted to kill him. He just didn't think, "Well, I'll just wound this guy." He flared up and killed him. Manchester Crown Court heard how shaven-haired Negro Patrick, who has four gold chips on his top front teeth, carried out the alleged murder on July 20th, 2017, after he and his friends began snorting cocaine. They had attended the home of a local woman without invitation, the court heard. So they just muscled in on somebody else's home, basically, and intimidated them into letting them be there. The group were asked to leave by the woman due to them being disrespectful. But Patrick treated the property as his own and was seen getting more and more agitated and worked up, pacing up and down the garden. They eventually left after the householder threatened to call police. That same evening, Mr. Grimshaw, a divorced father of one who got engaged to Miss Pook in 2017, had invited a friend over for the drinks. The group were moving inside from their garden when Miss Pook heard Patrick and two other men abusing a neighbour after asking him for a cigarette, it was said. In a statement read to the hearing, Miss Pook, who is in her 30s, said, "The front door was open, so I went over to shut it, but as I got there, I heard a commotion outside, and I saw a man called Jibs outside his house. I have known him for about 4 years. He has been through a lot in his life, and he is an alcoholic. With him, I saw three men who were all dressed in black tracksuits. I'm guessing that what that means is she saw three blacks there, basically. The group was shouting and swearing at Jibs, saying something along the lines of, "You effing weirdo C-word." Jibs was shouting back at them. The taller, darker-skinned male was walking on the pavement while the other two were walking in the road. One of the smaller males said to me, "What are you looking at, you slag?" and was being abusive. I said, "Charming," and I shouted for Mike to come outside. And that was the fatal error that this woman made, was to, instead of just going back inside, she called for her boyfriend to come out. And she's going to be regretting that for the rest of her life, poor woman, because she quite clearly wasn't aware of what can happen when you engage Negroes. Mike came out and said, "What are you saying?" But one of the males replied, "Get back into your effing house." Mike went out into the street and I came out and stood behind him. One of the shorter males stood in front of Mike and threw a punch. Then I heard one of the males say, "Get the knife out," but before anything else could happen, I turned to see blood coming out of Michael's neck. The statement continued, "It happened so quickly. I never saw a knife in anybody's hand. I don't remember much after that. As soon as I saw the blood, I started screaming." Michael shouted, "Call an ambulance." So I did. He was on the floor with his eyes open, but there was nothing there. People were performing CPR on him and nobody let me near him. I knew he was going to die. Everybody in the street seemed to know who the males were, but I didn't know any of them. I just heard the name Tyrone. So these are obviously gangsters on the estate, black gangsters on the estate, trying to make a name for themselves. And this poor woman assumed that they would behave like white people. And she had no idea that they would be carrying knives on them and that they'd be likely to stab somebody. She just knew that her honour had been insulted by them calling her a slag. And she thought, well, my boyfriend should be protecting me, which is why she stood behind him. I mean, this really needs to be a lesson to people to have nothing to do with these Negroes. Just avoid any confrontation with them because they will explode in ultra-violence. They will chimp out. The state won't warn you about this. The state will cover it up. The mainstream media will cover this up. We're very lucky that we've actually been told that this guy was black, and that's only because they had to show us a picture of him and a picture of the victim. Most of the time, they will hide it. Eyewitness Craig Churchill, 28, told the court, "I saw Michelle Pook, so I went over and had a casual conversation with her. But I heard some arguing behind me. I turned around and saw three people arguing with Jibs. They started asking Jibs for a cigarette, but because Jibs had been drinking, he got a bit leery. He acts like a kid when he's drunk. He doesn't know what he is doing. They started being abusive to him. Tyrone was pretending to swing at him, like pretending to hit him. Michelle told him to stop and that he is an alcoholic and he just behaves that way, but he is harmless. She then let her dog out, Bella, to distract them from Jibs. But she's not aggressive, she will just bark and get excited for attention. They then started walking towards us. Tyrone said to Michelle that if she didn't shut her mouth, he will give her a slap, and he was also calling her a slag. Tyrone was doing all the talking at this stage." Mr. Churchill added, "Michelle shouted for Michael to come out because she was getting abused. She was just telling Michael that she was being abused for no reason, and he started asking them why they were abusing a woman. But Tyrone kept calling him a big man, telling him to come outside. Michael went outside with his hands up in the air, like he was surrendering. He didn't want to fight them. He wasn't being aggressive. He just wanted to find out what was going on and why they were picking on a woman. But Tyrone had his hands under his top to look like he was going to draw something. I thought he was just trying to intimidate Michael, just trying to scare him. It looked like they were starting to scrap. Tyrone had his arms up and he swung for Michael. Michael looked like he was going to do the same. He looked like he was either going to throw a punch or he was covering his face. I didn't see a reaction at first from Michael, but then, a couple of seconds later, I saw him stumble back. Tyrone then stepped back and said, "That's what happens. This is my estate. I run it." He was happy. He was jumping up and down like he had done himself proud. He showed absolutely no concern for Michael. Well, they won't do. I'm sure he was very, very proud of himself doing this. This is a primal urge that they have to settle things with violence. The white man behaved like a white man. He played the white man. He tried to pacify things. He went out there with his arms up in the universal symbol for surrender. And this Negro just took advantage of that. He just saw someone who was weak, somebody that he could stab, basically, with no remorse. Obviously, it doesn't bother him that he's going to prison. Prison is 10 times better than living in Africa, obviously. It's not a deterrent to him to be going to prison. Mr. Churchill said he remembers Miss Pook screaming before Mr. Grimshaw came towards him, telling him to call an ambulance. He said, "I could see that he had a hole in his neck and there was blood coming out of it like it was a tap. He took about 4 or 5 steps towards me and he collapsed. I tried chasing them down the road, but I only got a couple of houses up and I realised that I couldn't catch them." I mean, this is going into a lot of details about this. And what you've got to think is, although this is just one case, this is happening every single day in Britain somewhere. There are Negroes stabbing a white person, mainly happening in London. And a lot of the time in London, it's blacks stabbing blacks. A lot of this is just within the race itself. But if you've got white people that are living in the same area, then they're far more likely to be going after a white guy than they are a black. They have more hatred for white people. They think whites are the people that are holding them down and whites are racist to them. Black on white crime far outweighs white on black crime. It's the complete opposite of the way that the media portrays it. I mean, nobody will even mention the racial aspect to this. Referring to the attack, Mr. Churchill said it was just uncalled for, no reason for it at all. Michael was charming, and he would do anything for anyone. Prosecuting Rob Hall told the jury, "Tyrone Patrick saw himself as something of a major player in the area, and he carried a knife on him, just in case anybody needed reminding of who was the boss." On the night in mention, a combination of Tyrone Patrick taking cocaine and drinking alcohol and Michael Grimshaw challenging him, resulted in the defendant using a knife with devastating consequences. Well, I would say that he didn't actually challenge him. I mean, if the guy went out there with his hands up in the air, that's surrender. That's not a challenge. Tyrone Patrick asked Gibbs for a cigarette, and he responded that he didn't have one. Michelle Pook heard that and told the three to leave him alone. Tyrone Patrick then told her to F off, and that, sadly, was the trigger that led to what followed. The comment was heard by Michael Grimshaw, who challenged him on how he spoke to Michelle Pook. When challenged about his comment, the defendant, rather than backing down, invited Michael Grimshaw to a fight. At this point, Tyrone Patrick and Michael Grimshaw were in reaching distance of each other. The defendant quickly produced a knife, and with it in his hand, he quickly stabbed Michael Grimshaw in the neck. It entered to a depth of 12 centimetres. Such was the speed of that stab, Michael Grimshaw could do nothing to prevent it from happening. Once the defendant had stabbed Michael Grimshaw, he withdrew the knife from his neck and challenged anyone else to a fight who wanted it. Patrick from Stretford was arrested 2 months afterwards as he tried to flee an address in Timperley. In interview, he denied stabbing Mr. Grimshaw, but declined to comment further, saying he was scared for the safety of his family. Patrick denies murder and the trial continues. And again, this highlights something that we see a lot with Negroes. They always plead not guilty, even when all the evidence is there that they are guilty, they always plead not guilty, which means that when they do get found, they do get found guilty, they end up with a much harsher prison sentence. And this is something that David Lammy highlighted. And he said this is the reason why there are more Negroes in prison, is because they tend to plead not guilty when they are guilty. So what he was advocating for was that when Negroes do lie and say that they're not guilty and they are found guilty, that there shouldn't be any extra sentence added to that. More special preferences and special treatment for Negroes. And there's also a directive to the judges that when they are trying a Negro and they find him guilty, when they're actually sentencing him, they have to bear in mind that he might have been the victim of racism at some point during his childhood, which, according to them, is reason enough for them to turn to a life of crime. So therefore, the prison sentence should be lessened. And of course, we hear just a couple of weeks back of somebody with a huge zombie knife machete that was trying to smash through somebody else's car window, quite obviously with murder in mind, wanting to kill somebody. And bear in mind, just having a knife, you're supposed to get a 5-year prison sentence for having a knife in the cities. And this raging Negro that had murder on mind, he was let off with a suspended sentence. And I would say that's quite clearly because of this directive to the judges that they are to lessen the sentences of Negroes because racism. It's ridiculous. And that's not the only crime that we've got against white people this week. We've got a second one. This one comes from ITV. 4 blacks have been jailed for a total of 92 years after being found guilty of killing 25-year-old white man Richard Hardy. 4 against 1 this time. Mr. Hardy was found injured in Mayfield Road, Farnborough, between 1:30 a.m. and 1:35 a.m. on Friday the 26th of January 2018. He had been stabbed multiple times and was pronounced dead at the scene. A jury at Portsmouth Crown Court found 3 of the defendants guilty of the murder of Mr. Hardy. Leroy Bosher, 27, of Aldwick Close, Farnborough, was found guilty of manslaughter and was jailed for 8 years. Omar Goodridge, 21, of Montgomery Way, Portsmouth, was jailed for 28 years. Hashim Siddiq, 20, of Fintry Walk, Farnborough, was jailed for 27 years. Kassan Siddiq, 23, of Fintry Walk, Farnborough, was jailed for 29 years. And what you've got there, you've got 2 relatives of the same family, probably 2 brothers. I mean, surely that should say that there is some kind of genetic component to criminality. Of course, it's not politically correct to say that, but criminality does run in families. Criminality does run in the Negro race. 10 times more likely to be charged with violent crime than whites are. 10 times as many blacks as whites in the juvenile prison system. And that's with all these directives to not send them to prison. That's with the courts coming down far harshly on white criminals than they do on black. And still there's 10 times as many in the juvenile court system. A 5th man, Luther Archibald, 31, of Totland Close, Farnborough, was deemed unfit to stand trial. The jury found that he had not unlawfully killed Mr. Hardy, but the other 4 had, and it was obviously premeditated, and they hacked him to death. Speaking after the sentence hearing, Detective Chief Inspector Dave Storey said, "Today marks the end of a long investigation into the death of a young man who was stabbed multiple times. We hope that today's sentence provides some sort of closure for the family and friends of Mr. Hardy and those who live in the area where this murder took place. Mr. Hardy's death was planned and totally unnecessary and is another example of the harm, misery and devastation that drug use and associated violence can inflict upon communities." All of which comes about through immigration. There wouldn't be any drug use, there wouldn't be any drug gangs if it wasn't for the immigration to our country and the drugs that they had brought with them. And the associated extreme violence comes from them as well. If you look at the extreme violence that goes on in Africa and then look at what goes on in London, it's obviously where it comes from. Running around with machetes, chopping each other up, shooting each other over the slightest insult, that's not Aryan behaviour. If people fell out 60, 70 years ago, they may have had a boxing match over it. They may have had a duel. Nobody used to hit anybody that wore glasses because that was dishonourable. None of that matters anymore. Now they'll throw acid in your face. They'll chop you up with a machete. They'll shoot you with an illegal gun. All just over owing a few pounds for some drugs. And that's what a lot of this is about. It's about people that get their drugs without paying for it. They say that they'll pay it back. They end up doing all the drugs. They've got no way to pay it back. And the black drug dealer comes along and kills them for it. And that's at the root of all of this, is the fact that we have foreigners here who have no concern whatsoever about killing white people. As we heard in the first story, that the Negro killer there, he had no concern at all. He was very proud of what he's done. He would have been boasting of the fact that he did that. A white man would be worrying for the rest of his life. He'd have that on his conscience for the rest of his life. Negroes don't have consciences. And it really couldn't be made any clearer to us that they don't have consciences. You just have to look at their behaviour. And then you have to question why it is our governments are bringing them into our countries when all of this crime that they bring with them wouldn't be happening if they weren't here. It's a deliberate genocide of white people. And it's being carried out at the top by white people. They're the ones that allowed this to happen. Yes, we've got Jews involved in it. Jews advocate for immigration all the time. Jews advocate for hate speech laws to prevent us from discussing it. But it's white people that go along with it. It's white people that brought the Jews into our countries in the first place. It's white people that emancipated them. It's white people that sold the publishing houses to them. They only make up less than 1% of the population. They don't have a huge army to occupy us with. They just occupy us through money and through the acquiescence of white traitors. Jews just do what Jews can't do and that comes naturally to them. Negroes just do what comes naturally to them. And the white man, when he is a traitor, he is not doing what comes naturally to him. He's not doing what comes naturally to him. Naturally, we reject all of this degeneracy. Naturally, we are repulsed by other races. You can see that in children. The natural instinct is to stick with your own race. And yet somehow we've given in to the temptation and this is our punishment. The only way it can be fixed is through fixing ourselves, fixing what is wrong with the white man that makes him give in to all of this, that makes him do all of this. And we can't change the people at the top. But we can change ourselves and the way that we look at life and the way that we respond to things. And eventually it will change at the top. Either that will happen or there will be all-out war. And obviously it would be preferable for there not to be war, for this to be peaceful. But you cannot have more than one race living in a territory. Either one race or the other will subsume the other race. And we want to keep our race alive. We want to prevent what's being done to us. We want to stop white genocide. And in order to do that, we need to have people at the top of society that are out there advocating for us. And it doesn't matter how it happens, but it has got to happen. Okay, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.